team, the chief director of chemicals and waste policy specialist monitoring services, and the chief director of integrated waste management, economy and sustainable use, the acting chief director of ocean economy, the acting chief director of specialist monitoring services, the director of marine protection services, ocean governance, Ms. Hani, the head in the office of the deputy minister, Ms. Maestri, the chief director of governance executive support, Mr. Mguni, PLO in the office of the minister, Mr. Nana, the PLO in the office of the deputy minister, Mr. Leon Tinis, from the office of the minister, Ms. Ndibongo, office of the DDG, and Ms. Mbokoto, from the office of the DDG. That is a delegation that we are told is here from the department. Welcome. May I check if there are apologies that have been deposited or registered at Chilega?
Yes, Chairperson, we have three apologies from Honorable Matunu and Bryant. They are traveling to Cape Town. The last one is from Honorable Kappa. He's attending the meeting with the Agriculture Committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Have you heard anything from Honorable Kanjo?
I spoke to her. She was not feeling well, but she said she will see if she'll be able to drop in or not.
Yeah, honorable members, maybe I must just inform you that as we were traveling yesterday from the public hearings in Limpopo province, honorable Kanjo was involved in an accident on her way to the airport. But she is well. I went to speak to her and see her. She just had sprains. She was hit by the apex. And I also made contact with the driver. He is also well. There was no blood stains or anything. The car is badly damaged. It's actually beyond repair, but both of them do not have broken bones and so on. But Honorable Kanjo had recommended that after being discharged around Kempton Park, she flew to Cape Town. She was going to her consult to get a second opinion. And I thought I must just inform the committee in case that could be what is informing her absence in this particular meeting. Do we have a quorum?
Yes, Chairperson, we do.
Okay, can I then have a mover of the agenda? I did not hear that.
I will move. Okay.
Did it honorable Minga?
Yes, that's clear.
Okay. Thank you, honorable Winkler. Can you get a seconder?
Thank you.
Biodiversity and marine protected areas. It is my special honor and privilege to invite the minister, the leader of the department, the delegation. you, Honorable Minister Krizi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to yourself, to all members of the committee, to Deputy Minister, and also to the DG and the team of colleagues who are representing our department this morning. Chairperson, you've asked for an overview in terms of the annual performance plan with regard to our own responsibilities in the areas that you have mentioned. And we have prepared a presentation. I suggest that we get straight into it. Obviously one can comment further once honourable members want to pose questions. Chair, you should just give guidance. My suggestion would be we do the whole presentation. There's a fair amount of detail, and then we take questions at the end rather than stopping after each section. What is your guidance in this regard?
My suspicion is that it's one document, Honourable Minister, am I correct?
Yes, it's one document but with different sections and different presenters. But if you are comfortable, then we will ask DG to lead it as one presentation.
I think that will be much smoother and it will save us time. Okay, let's follow that route.
Thank you, Chair, and let me take this opportunity to congratulate you on your appointment, and we hope we will enjoy a good working relationship with you as we had with your predecessor. Gigi, let me hand over to you so that you can call on relevant officials to lead the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to the honourable members. Let me also take this opportunity to congratulate you, Chairperson. And as a department, we are definitely going to ensure that we work with yourself in terms of all the requirements of the committee, but also to wish Honourable Gansho speedy recovery, given what you've just reported to the meeting. Thank you so much, Chairperson. I have colleagues that are going to be leading the presentation, and my proposal is that we start with the oceans economy, if we can flag that presentation. The presentation is going to cover mainly issues around marine protection program. It will also talk to your marine protected areas, and then we will then get aquaculture. So the DDG Oceans and Coast is going to make this presentation together with the DDG Fisheries Management on the aquaculture. We will then move to the certain aspects around chemicals and waste with the various PACISA programs which are informing our national strategy and the DDG of chemicals and waste management will do that presentation. And we will therefore end, Chairperson and members, with the last presentation on biodiversity, and the DDG BMC will then take the members through that presentation. With your permission, Chairperson, can I therefore hand over to Dr. Figizolo, who is then going to take us through this presentation and will immediately be followed by DDG Stu Middleton, who will cover the aquaculture part. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DDG. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, DG. Good morning to you, Chairperson. Good morning to the honourable members. Good morning to the minister and to the deputy minister and to DG and colleagues. With your permission, Chair, I would kindly request that perhaps I switch off my video because I'm worried that I'm in an area where there is no shedding at the moment, and then the resources in my battery will quickly run down, and if you permission, then I'll proceed to speak off and then start with the presentation, Chair. Thank you.
Sure.
Chair, the presentation I am going to, I welcome the opportunity. Thank you, Chair. I welcome the opportunity of presenting to you today and the portfolio committee, the mid-year achievements, revision of targets, and timelines of both the Oceans Economy Master Plan as well as Operation Pagisa, covering two areas, the marine governance, which includes the marine program as well as marine. And as the DGS indicator,
we can't hear you.
That's with my colleague. Next slide, please.
Dr. Vigizolo. Dr. Vigizolo's network is really unstable. I doubt if any of us can hear anything.
Chairperson, can I suggest we take the waste presentation? And in the meantime, we will try and relocate Dr. Vigizolo.
It is my side. But
Dr. Vigizolo, we can't hear you. Can we just cut him out and go to the waste presentation, please, Chair?
Okay, let's go to waste.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, Honourable DM, DGM colleagues. I will be taking you through the presentation on Operation Pagisa, Chemicals and Waste Economy, the emphasis there, National Waste Management Strategy, given that we did receive approval in 2020. I will also be highlighting how we have streamlined the strategy and make sure that programs are aligned to the implementation. Next slide. In the previous session, Honourable Chairperson and members, we have highlighted the 20 initiatives. I will be using that approach to take you through in terms of the progress thus far and our targets for the medium term. Next slide. In terms of the Pagisa aspiration, we are aiming to reduce the negative environmental and health impacts that are associated with waste and the risk that waste pose to the environment, including also the chemicals. We are aiming to increase commercialization of the circular economy and ensure that we create value from the resources that are currently discarded as waste. In our approach to waste economy, objectives are premised on increasing local utilization and beneficiation of waste resources. We are doing this through a creation of an enabling regulatory environment, including development of regulations such as exclusions, which I'll talk to later on. We are also ensuring that there are opportunities that are created from chemical and waste resources. We're talking about job creation, including SME development and creation of new markets. We are also investing in research and development innovation, including intellectual property. We are also investing in infrastructure to enhance the utilization of local waste resources in terms of new products. And overall, in terms of the impact, we are aiming to reduce the waste that gets to landfill. We will be taking you through the different waste streams, some of which are industrial waste and some are generated from households and are managed through municipalities. Next slide. Our approach is informed by the National Waste Management Strategy. The strategy emanates from the Waste Act and the current version of the strategy. We did receive approval in 2020. And it is premised on three pillars, the first one being waste minimization. In terms of the first 5 years of this 2020 National Waste Management Strategy, we are aiming to divert 45% of waste away from landfills. And within the next 10 years, we are growing that to be 55%, and the 15-year vision is to increase that to 70%. The second pillar focuses on effective and sustainable waste services. With regard to this pillar, we are working with municipalities. Municipalities are the biggest contributor to this pillar, ensuring that all South Africans live in a clean communities with waste services that are well managed and financially sustainable. In this case, we're talking about refuse collection that is aligned to the National Domestic Waste Collection Standard. The third pillar talks to awareness, compliance, and enforcement. It is critical that we mainstream awareness and ensure that the culture of compliance is upheld, and we promote that through zero tolerance of pollution, litter, and illegal dumping. We have put in place regulatory controls, and we need to make sure that we enforce compliance monitoring and enforcement with the regulatory controls. The next slide. In terms of these three strategic pillars emanating from the National Waste Management Strategy, there are a number of waste streams, and trying to make sure that we streamline those initiatives according to the pillars. And the waste streams that are focusing on waste minimization, and the first part deals with bulk industrial waste. In this case, we know that ash mainly generated from electricity production is one of the key waste streams that we are aiming to beneficiate, and currently we are beneficiating. Slag and gypsum are also some of the industrial waste streams that we are managing as part of the waste minimization pillar. Also linked to some of the municipal waste services, now talking about waste water, there is sewage sludge that is produced from our wastewater treatment works, and also coming from abattoirs. With regard to meat production, we also have the broader organic waste that is generated, and we are also having initiatives to divert that. Linked to that, we also have packaging waste. Most of our products that are on the market, they come in some sort of packaging. Packaging waste is also critical, and we want to ensure that in the manufacturing of the packaging products, product design, ensuring that the packaging takes into account the end of life of the specific packaging product, and we also want to prevent pollution that arises from the waste that is generated. The second part, in terms of the waste initiatives that are linked to the second pillar of the National Waste Management Strategy, we have some of the organic waste that is generated from households, typical examples being the food waste that is generated from households. We also have construction and demolition waste that is also joining the municipal solid waste team. We also include in the electrical and electronic equipment waste, the likes of computers and other fridges and other ICT-related equipment, packaging waste, paper, plastic, glass, and metal also is part of what is mainly generated as part of the municipal solid waste. Under compliance enforcement and awareness, it is critical that we do have the necessary regulatory tools, including norms and standards, as well as regulations to prevent pollution litter and illegal dumping. We're also working with the authorities, local municipalities through their bylaws, as well as the provinces, the respective environmental authorities. And also in the space, we do have international and multilateral environmental agreements that also we need to increase compliance on. Visibility is critical, and hence the awareness as part of the Good Green Deed program, as well as working on waste programs are critical. Next slide. The going into the 17 initiatives that are part of the National Waste Management Strategy, I'll first start with those that align to the three pillars and then move on to the chemicals initiative. Ash, given that we do have a lot of ash being generated as part of electricity supply, we have worked with enterprises to ensure that most of that ash goes into alternate building material, going into bricks, and also some of the road construction. So it's one initiative where we are increasing the ash uptake. The second initiative is also linked to supporting research and development and making sure that we are able to grow that commercialization and accelerate innovation. It's linked to the application of ash in agriculture, where ash is being used as a soil ameliorant. And also when it comes to acid mine drainage, in terms of especially within the Mpumalanga area, we have seen where ash has been applied to treat acid mine drainage, and also being part of rehabilitation of mines the separation of waste at source, and in this case, the priority is on the 8 metros, given that in this metropolitan areas, the waste generation volumes are high, and for prioritization, we need to ensure that we move with the municipalities such that the aim is to get 50% of households applying, municipalities applying an approach of separation of waste efforts. The ninth one is critical, that we have infrastructure, waste infrastructure, and in this case we are targeting material recovery facilities as well as plastic pelletization plants in order to ensure that we have sufficient infrastructure to manage the waste and also the recycling of the specific material. The tenth one relates to construction and demolition waste, and it's about ensuring that we are able to produce building aggregates from this construction and demolition waste. 14th one relates to the paper and packaging, especially given that we had put up the industry producer responsibility plan, and they are currently under implementation, EPR for all the packaging related waste streams. Compliance and enforcement pillar, the emphasis there is on increasing awareness and also raising the capacity. We've seen that as it relates especially to organic waste, we need to work with agricultural stakeholders to also minimize the food loss that is part of that value chain. Under this pillar, we are also having the 20th initiative, which is mainly on a national awareness campaign, and this campaign we are running also with mainstream it as part of our programs in the department, and we will be working on waste, and under that program we have the Good Green Deal program. On the chemicals part, we are working with the informal sector, and we do have reclamation of refrigerant gases as part of ensuring that they are not released to the environment. We also work with the Department of Health, ensuring that the paints that used to contain lead, heavy metal, which is problematic to the health and the environment, to make sure that it is banned.
Hold on.
I don't know why you missed that. Hold on.
Minister Creasy?
My apologies.
I'm sure there's a better way of communicating with the road. We don't want to hear the details. Please proceed, DDT.
On the chemicals side, we are also working. We have some of the stockpiles of some of the problematic chemicals, and we are working especially with our enforcement team, some of the clearing of that, one of which is within the KZN area, linked to Mercury, and we are facilitating a cleanup as part of our enforcement efforts to prevent pollution. Next slide. In terms of the work that we are doing to minimize waste, we are increasing reuse, recycling, recovery. Next slide, I will just talk basically in terms of the work that we are doing. We have been working with the South African Coal Association, given that they are taking the lead as industry experts. We have made use of the waste exclusion regulations, working with the industry, and in this case, EFCOM and SASFOL given that the application of ash to in the agricultural sector is also assisting with regard to diverting ash away from landfills. The export of ash needs supporting infrastructure, and that is the reason why we are working with Transnet in terms of ensuring that we are able to facilitate the process where the exportation of ash is one of the avenues that would contribute to growing the economy. We are working with the agricultural sector to ensure that the abattoirs that generate the meat waste, we can be able to track those and be able to facilitate a process where a business case for that waste going into a biogas generation can be considered. We have worked with provincial environment authorities, given that we help develop and publish for implementation the norms and standards for composting. We are currently managing this process, registrations are ongoing, and we were able to remove the administrative burden that was associated with the need for licensing, given that only now norms and standards are applicable, and it makes it easy for small enterprises to go into this area of work. Norms and standards for zinc waste treatment covering biogas generation has been published for implementation in April 2022, and we are continuing to monitor this space. We have also worked with Infrastructure South Africa to ensure that we enlist waste infrastructure projects that are under the banner of the National Waste Flagship Program, and they as a sixth strategic integrated project, number 37, and this particular initiative will enable this project to leverage off the regulatory and permitting fast tracking mechanisms that are in place, and it would sort of remove the administrative burden or make it easy in terms of having shorter turnaround times in terms of those that would require a licensing requirement. So in terms of the targets in this area, we will continue to support 80 SMMEs and ensure that over 2,000 jobs are also supported as part of our efforts. We are also prioritizing amendments of the waste exclusion regulations, given that we have seen that there could be some efficiency improvements that we can work on. We are continuing to work with the industry and the sector to ensure that there is improved coordination with regards to the work that we are doing in this area. The next slide. Okay, so that's to indicate that we have also facilitated approvals of for applications in the waste exclusion area, which covers 22 waste streams, and we have included about 32 beneficial uses. These are critical because the beneficial uses are indicative of the diversion away from landfills that we were able place in we have published for implementation the packaging guidelines, which guides the producers of packaging in terms of best practice with regards to product design to ensure that recycling is increased. We've also put into place, working with the Consumer Goods Council of South Africa, noting that a lot of producers are registered and they are also contributing the EPR fees that enable the various PROs to able to run a program for effective collection. We have seen a number of producers across the different material streams that have come forward to register. We've also worked with the Department of Trade and Trade, Industry and Competition in terms of their Black Industrialist Program, focusing on electrical and electronic equipment, supporting some of the SMMEs. We are working with the provincial environment authorities in terms of the integrated waste management plan, and to ensure that we monitor and those IWMPs also.
There's no sound, or is it on my side only?
Some of this waste is mainly generated by government institutions in terms of the nature of the waste. So in this area, we will continue to support 18 SMEs and also the various shops across the value chain of the electrical and electronic equipment. Next slide. Also, in this area of work, we are continuing to, we have historically, as part of the current cycle of Rehacking Enterprise Support Program, included 33 material recovery facilities for support, which are based in various municipalities, and those are also run by some of the SMMEs. As part of the working on waste, also continue to ensure that there is support for buyback centers as well as transfer stations. The 8 metros that that we are supporting as part of separation of waste exports, we are also strengthening the institutional support linked to the bylaws, ensuring that their authority status and enforcement status of bylaws is also enhanced. We are working on that. Local government support, working using the district development delivery model to ensure that under the support we are able to support the district through the human resource capacity that is based at each district, part of the structure of the department. We've also facilitated a process of support. It's not necessarily for all the municipalities, but those that have a dire need wherein we were able to avail yellow fleet support and increase awareness in those areas. So in terms of the targets, we will continue to support material recovery facilities development as well as transfer stations through leveraging the support coming from the producers and making use of the extended producer responsibility support. Next slide. So the next three slides is just to give an indication of some of the municipalities that have benefited from the fleet support through avail the chemicals management area in terms of our achievements on the next slide. We were able to work with the Department of Health with regards to the publication of regulations that are restricting the lead levels in paint, given the impact the environmental health impact of lead in paint. So this is one area that we had worked very closely with the Department of Health. We've also ensured that there is equipment that assists especially the environmental health practitioners that are stationed at the various ports of entry, so that they are able to test some of these paints that are being imported into the country. So it's a joint effort from both departments. We are also through our enforcement branch working with the companies that are liable for some of the mercury that needs to be cleaned up, and the progress is on track with regards to that cleanup in KZN. We are also working with the Department of Labor to ensure that the training of the refrigerant gas technicians is also on track in terms of the handling of those, but that they are not impacting on the environment. And the feasibility study on burning of the disposable cylinders is also being undertaken. So in this area, we will continue to support the informal technicians through upskilling and the training, and we also continue to work with the Department of Health in terms of capacitating and the environmental health practitioners that are facing at the various ports of entry. The next slide. With regards to compliance and enforcement, as well as the awareness, we have worked through this current cycle of the Recycling Enterprise Support Program to support 32 previously disadvantaged SMMEs that are involved in the value chain of waste recycling and beneficiation. We are also working with SEMPACs,
being implemented across all the districts. So this is a continuing program that we will be rolling out across the country. Next slide. As part of recycling support program, the call that was made in 2022, we are continuing to support this new and new and the objective is aligned to Operation Pakisa Waste Economy in terms of ensuring that Initiative 19, there is better coordination of SMME development. We are also working with the Department of Small Business Development, CIFA and SIDA entities to ensure that these enterprises, the 32 of them, they also can leverage support from the Small Business Department. The jobs that are linked to these 32 enterprises, we're talking over 1,000 direct jobs that would be supported as part of this program. Next slide. So in conclusion, the Yellow Fleet Support Program that we have been implementing as part of ensuring that we protect the environment from the impacts associated with waste management. In this case, we will be prioritizing landfill compliance in order to ensure that we improve on the landfill management. Also associated with municipal solid waste, we will be working with the extended producer responsibility scheme to ensure that the support for product redesign for the products that are prioritized for EPR, we are able to support them, and we will also be continuing to work together with the Small Business Department as well as Public Works and Infrastructure to leverage the support of the development finance institutions, especially given that we do have EPR schemes that are currently operational and to improve coordination with those. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. With your permission, can we go back to the presentation by Dr. Figizol?
I thought I should not interject DG. I thought you were going to call all of the presenters as they to follow one another.
Yes, Chairperson. We're trying to get hold of Figizolo. He is on the line, but maybe the connection is a bit of a challenge. We can go to the biodiversity one, Chairperson, so that DDG Biodiversity can be in a position to take the committee through.
Can we also agree to put Dr. Figizolo last so that they drive out of that place and get a better connectivity? We don't have to call him perpetually.
Chairperson, can we not deal with interrogating the previous presentation first before we go on to the next one?
I did not hear that, Honourable Paulson.
Can we not interrogate the previous presentation first before we go on to the next one?
Oh, well, I will leave that to the committee. There was a proposal at the beginning that we should take it because it's one document, but if the committee has changed its mind, it's still fine with me.
Chairperson, it's one document, but it's very different issues that you're dealing with.
I'm with you. If that is the view of the collective, let's then engage DDG or Seneca. Honorable Paulson, you will be the first. Can I know then, honorable member? Honorable Weber, honorable Singh, in that order. Honorable Paulson?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know, there's the department is not being entirely honest where there's South Africa that are rubbish done. You can see it wherever we go, except in the more affluent areas. Now, this past weekend, Chairperson, the Economic Freedom Fighters launched its Undestatani cleanup campaign. Now, we'll recall in 2011, Andrew Tani was protesting due to the lack of services in his community, which was a poor community. And this past weekend, the EFF launched the Andrew Tani cleanup campaign, because typically, poorer areas are not serviced by municipalities. And so we launched the cleanup campaign in Ward 32, Sibokeng in Gauteng. And it was quite a substantial program. The commander-in-chief led the program, the secretary-general of the EFF, and other members of the EFF central command team were present as well. So, obviously, the National Environmental Management Waste Act 59 of 2008 is the responsibility of this department. You are the custodians of the Minister of Health, the custodian of these acts. And that act, section 9.1 of that act says, a municipality must exercise its executive authority to deliver waste management services, which includes waste removal, waste storage, and waste disposal services. Now, it says it must exercise its executive authority to deliver. And when it says deliver, it does not mean deliver for affluent areas only. This department has failed to make sure that municipalities implement this particular act. So I want to know, going forward, what evidence would we have that this department is doing its job by making sure that municipalities implement a council law that's been around since 2008? To keep our environments clean. Over and above this. Because, you know, even with the recycling, the presenter said that the Western Cape is doing better, but even in the Western Cape, once again, it's in poorer communities that we are not receiving this particular service. That service is being received in the more affluent areas. Chairperson, we were all present in Bokmakiri, in Cape Town, cleaning up the sewer. So, I think the problem here is twofold. Number one, there is a lack of services to poorer communities. So how will this department make sure that municipalities service all communities? Number one. Right? And I think we should start getting these municipalities in here, like the Johannesburg Metro, like the city of Cape Town, and ask them what is stopping them from ensuring that poorer communities also come. Secondly, Jefferson, South Africa's got a very low record of waste recycling. Internationally, even poorer countries, third world countries, are recycling up to 75% of its waste. In South Africa, we're not even reaching 30%. So, and we've been hearing the story about the wonderful waste recycling initiatives, but there is no impact. The minister herself led a cleanup campaign. Okay, not something as on the large scale as the EFF. But I'm thinking, you know, it's very noble for us all to go out and participate in cleaning up the environment. But we have to ask ourselves the question, who's not doing their job? And why are people still in the held in their positions if they are not doing the work? Number one, the department is not making sure that these laws are enforced in the municipality. Nobody gets held accountable for that failure. Number two, there are municipalities that are failing in cleaning up the environment. There's no accountability. This is a character of South Africa. Things fail and they fall apart and nobody gets out accountable. So how are we going to, how can we expect anything different from this department to ensure that things change? It's just getting worse. So in terms of making sure that the act is implemented in all municipalities for everyone to make sure that we improve our recycling capabilities and having a clean environment. And my third question, Chairperson, what sort of money is being budgeted for recycling and recycling facilities, and what role is this department playing to ensure that recycling facilities are rolled out across municipalities? This is ideally where these new jobs could come through and getting people employed. We've seen one fairly decent recycling facility last year. But really the amount of dirt that we have landing up on landfills, landing up in waterways, shows us that we are losing this fight against litter pollution. So what is going to be done differently to ensure that this changes? And, you know, surely it's so bad, I would hang my head in shame if I'm responsible for a department that's supposed to implement and to ensure that a particular law is adhered to, and there's just no adherence. And I'm still in my job. Surely, you know, I mean, I know that we don't have a president that can hold his ministers to account. But surely the minister can hold them, make sure that members of their department do their work. Thank you very much, Jesus.
Thank you, Honorable Paulson, Honorable Weber.
Thank you, Chair. Am I clear? Can you
very
hear me?
Clear.
Yes, thank
very,
you.
Very clear.
I think firstly I want to thank the department I know in 2019 where we started with basically what, basically nothing, and I actually had a warm feeling when I see the amount of work they have put in there. I realized there's still a lot more to do, and everything doesn't work out the way it does, but I do have a better picture of where we're going and what is planning and how it is going. So in by saying that, I heard what Mr. Paulson said, and my questions were similar but different. In the understanding that the provincial, local and national are independent spheres from one another, we make the laws, and as I look at these things, it is incredibly important that the laws are enforced and there's compliance to it. I do not think we are the enforcement, but how can we ensure that our municipalities are actually adhering to it? And I know it's not our responsibility, the councillors, the of all parties, and then who do you go to if these laws are not enforced? Is it the SAPS? Who is it that the councillors must report to when these things are not happening? Enforcement is a major problem, and with waste management, it is it's really, really important. I wanted to ask when Mr. Kenny spoke about the three pillars. My first question was, and this is information for myself, does acid mine drainage fall under one of these pillars? I couldn't myself figure out. I thought it might be pillars two or one, and if that acid mine drainage waste fall under the FFE, also part of that is our wash plant. Their waste, when they have dams, and that waste of clay and coal breaks and it goes into the environment, does that waste or waste management of that fall under the FFE? That will be important, and if it does, and the wish of the three pillars, it will fall, and what we will do. And then I will just jump ahead. It was quite heartwarming to see that we can use ads to help with acid mine drainage, although I would like that that doesn't go into our freshwater waste. And then the second piece, we speak about plastic, but disposable diapers to me is a serious problem, and I know the minister and the department is seriously working on the diaper issue. But also, under which pillar does it fall? Does it just fall under normal waste with plastic? Because there is a serious waste issue regarding the diapers into our freshwater waste, and that is a big contribution to our problems that we have in our rivers and dams. The compliance issue, again, is a problem, because I do think we're on the right track, and we make a good contribution. To the example I want to use, which has nothing to do with waste, is the tree planting that the minister said we're going to plant 1 million trees, whatever. So I know trees are going to the municipalities, and a certain amount per year, and then it's given to the councillors to plant. But then some councillors have to buy it, or people have to buy it, and that is not the idea of it. Again, it's not the enforcement of the DFSE, but then the question is who is in charge of that. And if you have feedback from municipalities to provinces to the department on waste issues as it is going. The one issue that we had here which was important was, and I think Mr. Kenny did address it, and that was when you spoke about the norms and standards for composting. And the norms and standards was should have started being implemented since 1 April 2022. Does the department know how which provinces have started with it, and how far are they with implementing that? And if not, what can we do to encourage them to start and to do it? I think it goes with all our plans that we have for waste. I do want to compliment them to bring the EPW workers in and creating jobs. it would be nice to see a budget going with that. The question that I have, you talk about recycling enterprise support program, which is a great initiative, but if the municipalities were implementing recycling and actually it's happening in the municipality and by law it should be enforced, we should not have something like this. So I understand it and I'm not shooting it down, but again, we cannot keep on solving other programs just because municipalities are not doing their work and they're not compliant or enforced. So that is a major problem, and although we put enforcement into our policies, someone must actually make sure it is enforced. And again, it's not our authority, but then who and how do we, because in the end it comes back to the FFE, how do we make sure this is happening? And that enforcement is a problem, and then who needs to be followed up on that, and what is that process, because in the end, the FFE needs to stand in for it because no one is doing it, but the law is there and it's done. And then the last one question I want is tires. Again, under which pillar does tires fall? I know tire waste is a serious problem. I've heard actually over the weekend someone talking about there is a system where you can burn tires, where it doesn't do air pollution and you get some oil from it, and that can be used for energy and things like that. I don't know if the minister knows about it. It was new to me. Maybe you know about it. You're working on it. I would like to have seen a little bit more on tire waste and diaper waste, as it is, to me, one of our major contributory factors and problems that I can't see the solution to very soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Weber. Honourable C.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and greetings to the Minister, Deputy Minister, and all the officials that are on board. I must say this was a great presentation. Absolutely fantastic thinking, good ideas, a good way forward. But I think what we need to be convinced on, Honourable Chairperson and Minister, is on implementation. So my first question would be, you know, when we talk about PAGISA and Operation PAGISA, we had a presentation before by the President's office, somebody from the President's office. How do they fit into all of this? And why are these programs presented to us under PAGISA and not, you know, normal run-of-the-mill departmental functions? So that's the one. The other question that the Honourable Paulson and Weber have done extremely well, but just to emphasize the issue of funding for these programs. Great programs, what about funding? Then, Chairperson, you know, we talk about waste, and we talk about working with municipalities. Now, we know what happened in Durban recently. It lost half of its tourists that normally come to the beach in our holiday period. And because of sewer plants not functioning effectively, not being maintained, load shedding having an impact, to what extent is the national department working with these municipalities that have sewer plants and things like that to ensure that there is some kind of a master plan that these pump stations work? We can't have sewer flowing into the sea to the extent that it is. So, you know, I think Honourable Paulson also raised the issue of rural areas. In the presentation, I noted that there was interaction with, if I can remember, 8 metros that you spoke about. What happens to the rural municipalities? What happened to the district municipalities? What kind of programs are there with them so that we can talk about it? Because, you know, the national flower of the country is still plastic bags. Wherever you go, I mean, and like Mr. Honourable Paulson said, you know, when we went on site visits to some areas, you find rubbish. And why do you find rubbish? It's because the people in those areas don't have adequate skips or bins where they can put their dirt in. So what do? You can't leave it in your house, you just throw it outside. So can there be not some broad thinking and assistance to municipalities to provide skips and bins and the basic things so that waste doesn't just get thrown on the street? And my last question for now is, and I'm just throwing this in, Honorable Minister and Chairperson, you can rule me out of order, but I think at some stage we will have to talk about the declaration of the national state of disaster and what impact and what kind of studies are being done by our department to see where the floods did cause have disastrous effects, and what are we going to do? What is the department going to be doing, like in our game parks, etc.? There could have been a lot of damage. I know this is not related directly to waste, but you know, you look at St. Lucia, the farmers there, the farms have been flooded and damaged. So I'm just saying as an aside, could the department also, maybe in our next meeting or sometime, just tell us how are they responding to the declaration of the national state of disaster? Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, no doubt of order, Honorable Singh. Honorable Mbata.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DDG, for a wonderful presentation. I think there's a lot of progress on your unit, on what you have done, based on the report. But I have some few questions. I'm happy that Operation Pakistan is now being implemented fully. Not actually fully, but at a level that there's progress, and there's also involvement of different departments, different stakeholders. I am very much happy on that. You know, I think we need to focus on the separation of at source. Waste is very, remember, waste is very it's very broad, and it's being produced on a daily basis. I think we must have to look at how best can we deal with the separation of source at source. That's where we are going to make sure that the waste is diverted from the landfill site. The waste is not mixed, but the waste is collected per category. As the national department, including the DG, yourself, the DG, and the minister and the DM, I think we must also look at the issue of coming with a law, or by not a bylaw, a policy that will deal on issues of how waste should be collected. Because the problem comes in when the waste is collected once a week. If you benchmark with other countries, waste is collected from Monday to Friday per category. So here we haven't reached the stage where we have separated our waste at source to reduce all our problems. I think that's where it lies. That's where we get also the waste pickers that comes to the households and take out whatever they want in the dustbins, and then thereafter they go and sit somewhere else, and they end up polluting because they will take whatever they want, then they leave what they don't want in that spot. Then it also increases the issue of illegal dumping. I'm not saying that our own communities are the culprits. They are the culprits because they know that they can't dispose waste anyhow. Then I will say that we need to emphasize more on awareness, especially on the communities. I know you, according to the fears of government, the implementers are the municipalities. There's the national, there's the province, there's the municipalities, but our municipalities are failing us. For example, I'm just going to say that, remember, now in Tshwane, they are saying that they are not going to collect
or clean up any illegal dumping. And I just want to say to Colson, we have started to clean our own locations as the ANC. We started in the Accessville, which was the cleanest township, but because we could see that it was deteriorating, and when we spoke to the city, they said they don't have funds, then we took up the initiative to clean our own township. It's an ongoing process in all our townships, especially the Accessville started. Mamelodi has followed, and the Gauteng government have taken an initiative that they are now cleaning all the townships. They started in I think it's West Rand or somewhere. They have started in Ekurhuleni also there, where they all volunteers, including the MMCs, they go there and clean. So which is assisting, but it's not assisting the whole the municipality when the municipality is not taking part in assisting us. Then I'm still going to say that the issue of the bulk bulk containers, I seriously don't want them, because that's where we get problems, where young people or short people can't reach the bulk container. Then you find that there's waste around the bulk area. But my question is that can we look at the strategy or the policy to say how best can we deal with the issue of separation at source, so that it will assist us, all these piles and piles of waste. And also look at the, is that one of me as separation of source, it also it must include the collection of waste per category on from Monday to Friday, not once in a week. Then it will assist us. And also, I would also request that the department look at the municipality through the GDART, the provinces, on the issue where, especially GDART, when on the issue where the municipality says they are not going to clean any illegal dumping. I am happy with the issue of the ash on the initiative on the ash, but I want to get assurance from you that you know that usually that ash is flying ash, which is toxic. Let me get the assurance that that ash is being treated before it's being reused as bricks or road construction, because it's highly toxic if it's not treated. I am also happy that we are now using the construction waste, because before the construction waste wasn't touched that much, but I can hear now it's being touched very well. But I will request that also on the, I know Public Works, National Public Works, dealing with lots of construction projects. And then in probably is the Department of Infrastructure. So, and human settlement. I think we need to try also and look at the request that the National Department should also look at how best can they come up with a policy that will look at the inclusion of the management of the construction waste on the RFQ document. In fact, not only the RFQ for waste, for construction, I think most of the RFQs, they must have a portion, it must be compulsory that they must have a portion there on the RFQ on how that person, that contractor, or the service provider is going to deal with waste, and must produce the certificate from the landfill site. If it's a waste, that must go to the landfill site. If it's e-waste, you must have a two certificates from the I'm happy you talk about 33 MRF. I know it's in one, but please assist us. There's this MRF, which is at the entrance of Atreshville. There's a fruitless expenditure because there was lots of money invested there, but it's not working. There's trucks that are deteriorating in that facility and everything. And it's just, and now it's going to become a place where thugs will do their own criminal activity. Can you assist us on that? And also, I would also request the National Department to also look at the issue of the environmental management inspector, because most of the municipalities don't have that officers, and we make sure that we have one, not one, two or three, but through your lobbying with the municipalities, because it gives us a problem. As I'm sitting here, I have a problem of cable theft, which comes here twice a week or three times a week. We are being the most affected because I had a meeting with the director. He said from the environment side, they said they don't have an EMR. They have the EMI. They have just ordinary guys who go there, but they don't have powers to check this illegal recycling company, which are the ones that are taking all these cables that are being sent directly to them. Because they are not registered, there are no monitoring on that issue. It is a serious crisis that needs to be taken. You know, we have load shedding. We can't have load shedding. Once it's load shedding, then we have a cable theft. It's a really, really serious crisis. Can that be looked at, not only in Tswane, but in each and every municipality, so that it will minimize the issue of cable theft? Even those, the issue also that those people, they call themselves waste pickers also. When they are collecting their recyclables, they also remove metal things that they can go and sell to these illegal recyclers. It will reduce the criminality of this, and the police can be able to assist if they have an officer who will deal with that. I just want to know the issue of them. The abattoirs and the Department of Agriculture, because they are the ones who are the main producers, not only Department of Agriculture, by the way. Correctional services, they also slaughter their own animals for meat in the, not animals, the cows, the cows and so forth for the correctional services. They must also be included in DGG. But we must have a strategy on how to monitor and manage such activities. Because if once they are not managed and monitored, the department might do their own. But I'm happy that even the upcoming farmers, I've noticed that they are somehow they are also using the recycling of the tins, because they use the tins to use in their crops, and also the bones. So that means also we have a task that we need to do a training and awareness to the up-and-coming farmers, not only the up-and-coming farmers, the community, because remember the Department of Agriculture, they are also, they do also have the homestead backyard garden. So we must include that training must be part and parcel of the agriculture so that the communities can recycle and use their waste towards their own garden, and also to produce their own manure. Even when they are doing their tree cutting and the food waste from their homes, they must also start to create and produce their own manure. But in short, this is a very progressive report, and I'm really happy and thumbs up to the department. I know we started long time ago with the PACISA, but we have moved a lot, and I just want to say I will avail once my dissertation has been approved by the Northwest University, because it's on e-waste and in the DPW National Department. I will avail that to you, DDG, so that you can so utilize it to us. But I want to say also, I want to congratulate the Gauteng government on e-government. They are doing a lot on the issue of e-waste, because they are even are going to the what is it, taxi ranks and so forth. But I also want to say, when you target the departments, don't only target the ICT. What I've realized is that the one that deals with the, I forgot the name, the one that deals with immovable and movable assets, they are the ones who have the register of all the electronic waste and the non-electronic waste. And they are the ones in most of the departments, they are the ones who deal on who comes and collects the e-waste and so forth, whether they get the proper certificate, but at least there's some form of a correct procedure that is being done by the departments. But also look at the asset department that deals with the assets register, not only the ICT. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Mbata. Honorable Winkler, followed by Honorable Dlamini.
Thank you, Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Honorable Winkler.
Fantastic. Okay, so what I really like to know is, what are the trends with regard to the proper management of landfill sites, and what lengths are we using to determine whether these interventions are working? How many landfill sites have been issued with non-compliant...
Hello, very good morning to the news. I'm just making that a welcome aboard. This is the airline to Cape Town. On behalf of Captain Alvain Mayer, First Officer Ronesh Priyagla, on my side, Eugenia.
Honorable Winkler, you are in a flight.
Okay,
Honorable Winkler is on a flight. Sounds like an international flight. We will pass her. She has deposited a message that she's about to leave now on the chat group. Let's go to Honorable Dlamini.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe let me join other honorables on accessing the report. A work in progress, it's a good report. It's able now to give us more clarity to other things that are supposed to be done. But there are a few points that I just want to raise. One, I think the report, it covers the question of waste management that we're doing good there. In particular, on the domestic waste and industrial waste. I'll request to say that now probably it would be better again to speak about the waste treatment. Because if we're able to manage waste, then the treatment of waste is not moving properly. In particular, on the waste dump site or landfill. Therefore, we should be able to say what best that can be able to increase the question of the cleaning the dumping site where the waste is. So that's the first point that I want to raise. Another point, Chair, are the nappies. Really, these nappies are creating a lot of problems or headaches. I know some of us were using these cloth nappies, they were very good, but now because of environmental developing of the countries and all that, therefore we're now using these nappies. What best that we can be able to do in order to treat this kind of nappies? If now we are not able to treat them, what best that we can be able to manage this kind of nappies? To take them to the waste, to take them only, I mean, everywhere, not able to be done. Therefore, I think that probably the department must be able to have some strategy in the way of the question of dealing about these nappies. Because all over the country, everybody is talking about these nappies. The third point is the question of education. You know, the question of separation of waste is not happening properly even in township. I think we must be able to have a strategy of education on that one. How we can be able to make sure people in the townships, they can be able to understand the benefit of separating waste. Because I agree with other honorables when they talk about this big dustbin and all that, they are not going to help us at all. But they'll try to create other things else. But let's see. What best that we can be able to do to teach our own people in township and other areas to separate waste and the question of benefits. The last one is the question of bylaws. This illegal dumping that is taking place is because that now the bylaws are not being enforced. But if at all we can be able to enforce the bylaws, then people are able to face penalty. Then now we name and shame. It will reduce the question of dumping, this illegal dumping. But at the present moment, everybody just do whatever they want to be able to do. They know that there will be no consequences that will come to them. That is why now they're starting to do some of these things. I think these are the four areas that I think in federal department must be able to improve on it and make sure what do we do. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tamini. We need to be very careful of time, honorable members. I'm told that the presentation is rather very long. I'm not in any way trying to avoid questions, but we need to also be very clear on the kind of questions we ask. There are questions we appreciate that they are intertwined and interrelated, but there are questions that fall squarely within the domain of the Department of Agriculture, for instance, and we can't accept the Department of Environment to respond to that. If push comes to shove, we'll have to convene the Department of Agriculture so that they are able to respond to some of the issues. Just on my part, DDG, very quickly, I would like to know, on the Operation Pagisa programs, are they independently evaluated for their effectiveness in meeting their objectives? Besides this kind of parliamentary reviews that we do, as it relates to the role of the part of that, besides the role, the kind of reviews that we do as a PC. If yes, at what intervals are these programs designed to be evaluated? I'm sure it will help us if the department can share some of the monitoring and evaluation reports with us to assist us in getting a better understanding of these workings on operations. Is it the strategy that leads to the program, or how does the integration between the broader operation package, is there a strategy that leads to this program, or how does the integration between the broader
Operation Pakisa program and the National Biodiversity Economic Strategy takes place. Thank you very much. Minister, I see your camera is on.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me have a first bite at answering the questions. And I think where we need to start is the relationship between the Pakisa programs and the department, the departmental APP, which is really the question that you have raised. And I think that it's important that honourable members understand that there's no separate funding available for the Pakisas. They are essentially part of the annual performance plan of the department. And I think with the waste Pakisa in particular, you can't have an effective recycling industry unless you have an effective waste management system in the country. And I think the questions and the comments that many colleagues have raised in this portfolio committee are spot on. So in order to have effective recycling, you have to have household waste collection and you have to have household waste separation. What we know is that between 30 and 40% of households in our country, particularly households in informal settlements, do not have regular waste collection. So it's important that colleagues understand that dumping occurs because people don't have viable solutions for household waste. It's not a failure of the regulatory environment. It's a failure of the waste collection responsibility of municipalities. So that's where we need to start. Honourable Mbata is correct that ideally you need household waste separation, but only the cities of Johannesburg and Cape Town have had waste separation, household waste separation. And there it's just paper, plastic, glass, in the recycling and tins in the recycling bin and all other forms of waste in the general waste bin. And to the extent that Cape Town does better with regard to recycling, it's because there has been better rollout of household waste separation. But honourable members who have raised the point that we still don't have adequate waste collection in any of our metros in the informal settlements would be entirely correct. And that's why people dump. We've also had a situation where in a number of the other cities, regular weekly waste collection in formal settlements is also sporadic. So in looking at this situation and trying to understand what can we do as a department to correct it, we brought in the revised National Waste Management Strategy in 2019 so that we could make it clear to everybody what is the program to deal with waste in the country. What we've then done through MinMec is to work with municipalities and also with provincial governments to monitor improvement in household waste collection, to monitor problems with waste vehicles, because obviously you can't collect waste by hand. You have to have compactor trucks where you are cleaning up dump sites, you need TLBs and so on. So monitoring that, and you will see from the presentation that we've given that we are supporting municipalities where we have surplus budget to provide what we call yellow fleet, because often waste is not collected because the yellow fleet either has broken down, has not been repaired, or is non-existent. And then the third area is the area of landfill diversion and landfill management. And again, there are many municipalities that are not compliant, and we've given that information to this committee before. So one of the things we are working with municipalities on is improving the management of landfills. Landfills need, the waste needs to be compacted, it needs to be covered with soil, because otherwise you have the problem of flies. But landfills need to be properly lined so that there's no leachate into the groundwater system and so on and so forth. So there is a problem, as we all know, with the state of performance of our municipalities. And it's very pleasing to hear that the EFF has now joined us in conducting cleanup. You know, they say that it's better late than never. So we're very delighted that you've joined this process, Honourable Paulson. But of course, one of the questions you will soon realize is that it's not a sustainable activity. We can give you chapter and verse of cleanups we have done in dozens of municipalities across the country. But unless you solve the household waste collection problem, you will come back in a couple of weeks and the rubbish will all be on the dump site once again. Could we do more in terms of community education? Yes, we can. And we do that when we do cleanup. But the reality is that any one of us who doesn't have a way of dealing with our household waste disposal, in the end, we will also engage in illegal dumping. So this is what we are doing. We are working with municipalities. We are working with provincial governments. In the end, the money for waste collection doesn't reside at national or at provincial government level. It resides at municipal level, and it comes from the rates and taxes that people pay in municipalities. So if there is a problem with the collection of revenue in a municipality, that will have a knock-on effect for waste services and all other services. So we are tightening monitoring and evaluation. We have allocated EPWP workers to district and metro municipalities to assist with cleanups. I've already explained how we are providing yellow fleet. We have also changed the treasury provisions so that money for infrastructure can be spent on the yellow fleet. But unless the municipality is going to reorganize itself and organize itself properly, there are limits to what provincial and national government can do. And I think it's very important to tighten up on accountability of municipalities. I suppose that's why you have councils where honorable members' political parties would be represented, and it's why you have provincial legislatures. And I think that encouraging accountability around waste management is a very important activity that everybody, all political parties, need to get involved in, because it's the only way, as honourable members are saying, that we're going to improve the situation. What is important is to answer Honourable Singh's question about what is the role of Infrastructure SA. So the presentation was not the presidency as such, it was Infrastructure SA. And we have been working with Infrastructure SA to put out a call for proposals for the building of compliant landfills and for the management of compliant landfills. landfills, because a lot of municipalities are saying to us that this is something that they don't feel equipped to do at this point in time. Of course, one does have to ask the question in the longer term as to whether landfilling is an appropriate activity. And there was a time when the current ruling party was in charge of the city of Johannesburg, when there was a whole policy decision taken to move away from landfilling and to move towards waste incineration and also obviously promoting recycling as a waste diversion option. Unfortunately, one hasn't seen sustainability with the administrations that have come in subsequently, and one has indeed been posing the question to the metros in Gauteng, what are you planning to do when your existing landfill space runs out? I think it's in about 2027. So I think this is an important question which all levels of government need to be seized with and need to be focusing on. We are trying through Infrastructure SA to look at building more compliant landfills in district and rural municipalities, but also looking at the possibility of alternate forms of waste treatment for the metros. I would just want to say that on the single-use plastics, we've also made presentations to this committee before on this matter. We are part of the International Plastics Pact. We are involved in the negotiations that are going on to reduce plastic pollution. We are working with the Consumer Goods Council to take plastic bags and single-use plastics out of the value chain. And I think in many shops and fast food centers, you would see alternative products now being introduced. And that is part of the work that this department has been very actively involved in. You would know we've also created standards for plastic bags and black bags to have an increasing concentrate of recyclate going forward. Just on the issue of flooding, Member Singh, we did also give a presentation in the past to this committee on how we were involved in the floods in Durban, and you would recall that one of the things that we have to do in relation to flood situations is to facilitate exemptions from EIAs so that bridges, roads, landfills can be repaired as a result of flooding. But you would also be aware that we had a very extensive campaign to support cleanup operations on the beaches in KZN after the flooding, because there was almost 250 kilometers of beach that was devastated as a result of those flooding activities. On the question of nappies are a very complicated product to recycle. We have done some experimental work on it. Part of the difficulty with nappies is that nappies are filled with granules that are moisture absorbing, and those granules are not part of the existing recycling streams. We've done some investigation in whether those granules could be used for water retention purposes in agriculture, and there's been some quite interesting micro studies that have been done. But I think the big problem with nappies is that in a nappy you would have plastic, you would have paper, you would have these granules, and of course you would have the problem of organic waste. And it's very complicated to to recycle a product like that. I think in the short term, what's more important is to improve household waste collection so that people don't have to dump their nappies in situations that are inappropriate. Let me hand over to the department just to deal with some of the technical questions that have been posed by members.
Thank you, Minister. Just on the question on recycling facilities, question by Honourable Paulson, as part of the upcoming brief on the working on waste programs, that is on the program, there will be details because we do support buyback centres, which are part of the broader infrastructure within municipal space in terms of the facilities. Honourable Weber raised a question on acid mine drainage. So our responsibility there is to find ways on how the ash can be utilised. Acid mine drainage falls within the Department of Water and Sanitation, given that the impact is on water resources, specifically groundwater. So that DWS, together with mineral resources, they are managing that. So ours is just to promote the use of the ash. And I think the other question that linked to water and sanitation was raised by Honourable Sin with regard to the wastewater treatment works. They are managed within the National Water Act, which is administered by the Department of Water and Sanitation. So in terms of managing the pollution of water resources and the compliance monitoring, as well as the plans of wastewater treatment works to get them to the acceptable operation, and the Water and Sanitation Department will assist. I'm going to request that for the norms and standards on composting in terms of which provinces, we will submit the details in terms of the facilities and so forth in writing in terms of the details, because that is registered at provincial level. So we will facilitate that process of sharing the information. On the tires, currently there are some processing. It's a question raised by Honorable Weber in terms of cramming of waste tires as well as pyrolysis. Even with that, it's something that we are also tracking at the departmental annual performance level, but we will provide in writing in terms of the tonnages that have been processed through pyrolysis and cramming as part of the written response. Honorable Mbatha, in terms of the use of ash, whether we there is treatment as part of the exclusion process, allowing for beneficial use of ash, we also follow the risk-based approach, and for each and every location where there will be the application or the beneficial use, even the receiving environment, there are assessments that go into that. So where treatment is required, it's part of the approval process. On the public procurement, specifically on construction and demolition waste, we have been trying to have a green procurement approach to ensure that not only the Department of Public Works, but all the institutions of government, even where we can be able to make work with the National Treasury to
to try and work on that process. I think with the procurement amendments that they had to facilitate in the current and previous year, it was not we were not able to move on this green public procurement, but it's something that we are currently prioritizing such that it can fast track especially the construction and demolition waste. On, I think, Honorable Chairperson, on the question of the PAKISAS, I think maybe just to indicate that the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation did some evaluation, and we will also share those reports. They might not necessarily go into maybe the detail that we've gone into, but there will be some evaluation of this PAKISA as well as part of that evaluation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just one response in relation to enforcement and compliance, and I think Honorable Paulson raised the matter very sharply around the different spheres of government improving on enforcement, but also Honorable Mbata did also emphasize on us as a department to lobby and support local government, especially in relation to capacity related to the EMI. And I think also Honorable Lamin was also emphasizing on the issues of then working very closely with municipalities to ensure that they enforce bylaws. What I want to highlight is that enforcement in relation to general waste lies in provinces working together with municipalities, while as a department we do deal with hazardous waste issues. And also, where requested, we do support provinces, especially around providing expertise in as far as investigative guidance. But also, I think on the EMI specifically, as a department, we also do assist in terms of training nationally to strengthen the compliance and enforcement capacity. Obviously, I think the reality, however, which we grapple with on an ongoing basis is around the capacity in provinces, given their limited numbers of officials and also their budgetary. But as part of a strategy to support local government, those are some of the areas that we are hoping to work on and improve to ensure that there's proper compliance and enforcement, given that it is a concurrent function across spheres of government. Thank you, Chair. I thought I just wanted to just add on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm not too sure if you have seen the questions of Honorable Winkler on the chat, but because of time, please note them in the meantime. Can we go to biodiversity?
Thank you, Chair. DDG Mohokwa is going to take the committee through. Thank you.
Thank you very much, good morning to you. Good morning, Minister, Deputy Minister, and members of the Portfolio Committee and colleagues. I'm going to take you through the progress on the biodiversity economy PAKISA. Next slide, please. So the first part will deal with the bioprospect economy progress. Then we will move to the wildlife economy progress, then ecotourism economy progress, and the transformational government interventions. Next slide. These are some of the bioprospecting products. Just to move to the next slide to indicate that in respect of bioprospecting, how we increase the supply through promoting mass cultivation and driving mass cultivation of 25 plant species of strategic importance and increasing cultivation by 500 hectares per annum. We also define management plans to ensure sustainable wild harvesting of 7 high-value plant species to safeguard long-term supply. Then on how we increase demand and local value addition, this is through establishing a coordinator and facilitating BioPanzer, which is the Bioproduct Advancement Network South Africa, to harness existing initiatives and to address the innovation chasm through promoting applied research, local processing, innovation and product development, and to promote the use and awareness of products with the institutions. Then on regulatory, this is about fast-tracking amendments of Chapter 6 of NEMBA to ease compliance while ensuring protection of the rights and benefits of traditional knowledge holders and alignment with the Nagoya Protocol and on access and benefit sharing, and also improving efficiencies in the bio-prospecting access and benefit sharing permitting system. And transformation is a cost-cutting essential element in all this that we do. Next slide, please. Then in terms of the high-level progress, 22 million was shared by the industry with beneficiary communities from the Amakgakgabe Kingdom in the Eastern Cape in recognition of their traditional knowledge of Pelargonium sidoides species. And then the Khaseleka and Tlongwane communities in Limpopo benefited from the CSIR monitoring project. No Refir and Postu communities benefited from the Selesium project, acknowledging their traditional knowledge of the species, and 12 million from that 22 million specifically forms part of the industry-wide rooibos benefit-sharing agreement made to the COI and the SEN councils in April last year. We've issued in excess of 142 bio-prospecting, bio-trade permits to individuals and companies to date, facilitating research and development as well as for commercial trade of products involving indigenous biological resources and or associated traditional knowledge for local and international users, which demonstrates the potential of the biodiversity sector to contribute to the country's development needs. 93 benefit sharing agreements have been concluded and approved, promoting partnerships which result in the distribution benefits of both monetary and non-monetary benefits to the communities that are custodians of the resource and associated traditional knowledge. And 21 SMMEs were trained as part of capacity building program, while 16 were supported to access new markets and develop new products and increase capacity. The 6 development plans for the following species, which is marula, baobab, aliferous honey bush, buchu, and cluster of essential oils that were completed during 2021 are in implementation phase, and these plans identified and prioritized key strategic areas requiring intervention for sector growth and transformation. And the BAPS electronic permitting system has been completed, tested, and officials from management authorities have been trained, and this is expected to go live on the 1st of April this year. Next slide, please. Just to provide details of the donor-funded project by UNDP, which is a Global Environment Facility Project 6 on ABS, and the targets relating to the progress. The project has a budget of $6.2 million, which is approximately 93 million rand. And the first part, the first component is to support ABS compliant landscapes in respect of ensuring that we complete benefit sharing agreements. So we've completed one for African ginger, and this will progress into 2023. Also, one non-monetary benefit sharing mechanism has been developed for rooibos, which has been initiated this year, and national registration system is operational.
And then on the ABS, compliant community empowerment and improved landscape management, this focuses on enterprise development in Kefu communities in the Eastern Cape, the SME grant support to Honeybush community, and the procurement is pending finalization, the training and empowerment to enter value chains, and improved access to materials and products. So that the Northern Cape Hub can be operational and results will be in this year. And then on research and development, we have a hub in the Northern Cape. The MOU is in place between the department, Agricultural Research Council, Dalrat and Northern Cape, and three draft best management practice guidelines for management and cultivation of key species. These have been included in the MOU. And then also the process to apply to SAFPA, which is Health Product Registration Organization for African Ginger as a complementary medicine, and a three times subsidized expert and research has been finalized. So we hope that the registration will be done next year. On sustainable resource management, so we've completed three resource assessments for honeybush, rooibos, and pelargonium. And then the three non-detriment findings, we've completed one for pelargonium and one for rooibos and honeybush outstanding. And also the draft for pelargonium is under review, currently in stakeholder engagement phase. And also the National Sustainable Conservation and National Conservation and Sustainable Use Standard and Certification Scheme and National Biotech Standard was completed in 2022. That was last year. Next slide. And the map on the side just shows where we are intervening in terms of that particular project. Next slide, please. So just to provide an update on the initiative on the bioprospecting economy, the first was to review NEMBA to be compliant, while ensuring protection of rights and benefits of traditional knowledge. Members will be aware that the White Paper on Conservation and Sustainable Use of South Africa's Biodiversity is currently in the cabinet process for it was approved for consultation last year. We have just completed the process and it's in the cabinet approval process now. And once this is concluded, we are already undertaking a review of NEMBA to identify areas that will require review. And also we are reviewing the National Biodiversity Economy Strategy. On the National Biodiversity Biotrade Standards Framework in compliance with the Nagoya Protocol on ABS, this is underway. On Initiative 2 is about reviewing the BAPS regulations is compliance with entities, and these amendments of the regulations will follow the review of and completion of Chapter 6 of NEMBA regulations, and activities are already underway to ease compliance by regulated entities, and this includes development of the biocommunity biocultural protocols, which affirm the rights of the community over their indigenous genetic resources. On Initiative 3, which is about improving the permitting system for BAPS, we now hold the advisory committee meetings on a monthly basis, contrary to what we used to do on a quarterly basis. We are undertaking ongoing capacity building and training workshops, including
to promote the benefits of the wildlife economy. The revised terms of reference for the wildlife forum has been approved and the forum is now in operation. and quarterly wildlife forum sessions or meetings do take place on a regular basis. And this is where we discuss matters to focus on conservation and sustainable use. The current representation includes 29 associations, 9 management authorities, 7 national departments, and members will recall that last week there was a recommendation that we also include the Department of Labor, and we've invited them to our next meeting. Regarding the development of an integrated knowledge evidence generating and sharing platform to support the wildlife economy, we have developed an MOU in partnership with the University of Venda, and this is currently going through the legal vetting process, and similar MOUs will be entered with other institutions of higher learning in the near future. Next slide, please. Just to indicate that to support this work, Sandy and Seth SA, together with us, we are working together to develop a first set of accounts specifically measuring the biodiversity economy in respect of employment and contribution to the gross and development product. So South Africa is a wealth of biodiversity assets and ecological infrastructure that contributes to inclusive growth and development. And this helps to make the case for investment in biodiversity, including in managing and conserving the biodiversity and ecosystem assets that underpin the biodiversity economy. So what this biodiversity economy satellite account will contain is that it will have product codes, it will also have industry codes, and occupation codes, so that we can be able to classify each of these three categories so that we can then make final determination in respect of the biodiversity economy contribution to the GDP, to employment numbers, and with this essay on board, we found
recording in progress.
In the near future, they will also be able to the biodiversity economy account for the country. Next slide. On ecotourism initiative, next slide. So this is initiative 15, which is about leveraging protected areas to unlock economic potential, and this is implemented through the Disciplined Parks Program and consists of 5 thematic areas. And the progress below for quarter 2 was received from the management authorities as indicated them. On economic development, job opportunities, 614 opportunities created, and 466,000 bundles of grass harvested with the monetary value of 466,000. 91 community members harvested broom and grass, estimated at 978 kilograms, and 5 grass harvesting permits have been issued. 3 contractors harvested firewood in Kama National Park, and 115 impala skins were also donated to 8 local enterprises in Kruger National Park, and 850 kilograms of elephant meat was delivered to tribal council in various areas. On restoration of land rights, which is the work that we do with Dalrout and the commission, so the CPA meetings and CMC meetings have been held, there's about 12 of them. One pre-management agreement has been finalized, and in respect of the land claims that has been finalized, the proper land claim settlement process has been concluded, and the claimants have signed the settlement agreement and beneficiation package in respect of the properties that are claimed inside Golden Gate Highlands National Park. Next slide, please. Continuing on initiative 15, in respect of capacity building awareness and education, we've played 108 beneficiaries and undertook 106 workshops and awareness campaigns. On co-governance, provincial and park meeting, 40 meetings to date, and committee meeting or park forums or regional meetings, 27 of them. On community stewardship, we celebrated 7 calendar events, and then 7 new registrations for fishing, and 16 renewals were recorded in Kama Marine Protected Area,
and 34 cases were registered for the month of July to August 2022. And three public-private partnership opportunities were awarded to emerging contractors and qualifying contractors and affirmative enterprises, and one PPP opportunity has been awarded. Next slide, please. This is just to show some of the infrastructure interventions that have been made. This is Mbuba Lodge in the Eastern Cape, just to show before where the restoration was under, or the upgrade was done at the STEM North Interpretive Center and the CADI, and the renovations and construction of ablutions facilities at Grassland Center, and upgrading of the day visitor facilities at Fish River to include ablutions facility in Bry area. Next slide. This is Cape Morgan in the Eastern Cape. This included infrastructure development upgrade to the nature reserve. And this included construction of tourist accommodation, 32 sleeper bed units, and renovations and alterations to staff accommodation, and also alterations to existing exhibition hall and display room into restaurant and kitchen, and also external works including paving, parking spaces and walkways. Next slide. This is Chivase Nature Reserve in Limpopo, and here was development and upgrading of infrastructure in and around the protected area, overnight visitor and staff accommodation, admin buildings and conference facilities, roads and fence within the protected area, and development of commercial assets for communities in and around the protected areas, community-owned hospitality establishment, couriers, tuck shops, amphitheaters, and exhibition areas, and support to ancillary services and SME development complementary to the protected areas, which included facilities and also for refuse removal. Next slide, please. This is Lekgalane Nature Reserve, also in Limpopo. We completed the swimming pool, as you can see there on the graphic. So this included tourist infrastructure development and upgrade, which included over and above the swimming pool, the Bry area, roads, paving of pathways, completing the camping sites and shared facilities and laundry facilities also. Next slide. This is Masebe Nature Reserve, which is also in the Popo. Staff accommodation and other tourism tourist facilities were upgraded. So these are single-story chalets, family chalets, about 5 of them, and double-story chalet, 11 of them, restaurant building, storeroom, laundry room, dry area, hotel block, and conference hall. Next slide. Just to indicate the partnerships that we have in place, first one being with the MOU here, GSDD, Small Business Development, which focuses on implementation of the three DEF PAKISA programs, the Biodiversity Economy, Ocean and Coast, and Chemicals and Waste PAKISA, with special attention to incubating respective SMMEs and meeting continuing on a regular basis. GFFE and DELRAC focuses on all branches within GFFE to ensure also alignment with the legislation. And then GFFE with Department of COPTA and Traditional Cooperative Governance and Traditional Authorities focuses on all areas of mutual interest, including the national out of traditional and Western leaders. These next slides are just showing some of those biodiversity finance initiative programs that are also contributing to unlocking the biodiversity economy value. We have about 7 finance solutions. The first one was around building protected area revenue and retention in 4 provinces. In this particular case, this is in progress. We have developed drafted plans for 4 protected areas. We've done a 4-sheet assessment, and the implementation is going to be done by the provinces. This also runs parallel to the work or complementary to the work that we are doing on the biodiversity investment portal. And then regarding reform of property rates, legislation and interpretation and application to the PA,
rates, and we are currently working with Cocta and Salga on this particular project and are awaiting their review of the outcome of that study. And then regarding the stewardship program, we have completed the value proposition and policy recommendation, and part of this will also complement our work on the protected area. And the report suggests that about 100 million per annum is needed to catalyze the program, and this particular project is currently under discussion in the stewardship working group. On the biodiversity incentives, we engaged National Treasury. We put this particular solution on hold because from Treasury, National Treasury perspective, there was no appetite to continue with the project under the fiscal circumstances that the country finds itself in. Next slide, please. The next finance solution related to the offset modality for protected area expansion. This we have just initiated this one, and this will also involve developing a digital offset register where a developer will then be directed in terms of where offsets can be realized for projects that they are implementing. And then on the certification scheme, which is the one that I reported on earlier on, that we have completed the standards in the certification framework, and we have completed the business case and the demand study, and we are in the process of finalizing this particular project for approval. And then the investment portal, as indicated, that this is already live, and we are seeing interest in respect of connecting investees and investors on some of the projects that are bankable. And the last one was on improving effectiveness of permits, which where we are looking at the amounts that are charged for the permits. We have completed the assessment of the current permits that we are charging, and a policy brief has been done. The earlier assessment indicates that about 7.5 million per year is foregone revenue due to top permits pricing currently, due to the current mechanism that we are using for pricing. And then the top permit pricing currently is under review for the provinces to then implement. This work will also undertake with the National Treasury. Next slide, please. The last slide is just to indicate some of the abbreviations that we have used. I think this is the second last slide that we have used in the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I invite you to engage the presentation. Honorable Paulsen, you'll be the first. Honorable Weber, you'll be the second. Proceed, honorable Paulsen.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, one of the possible causes of or sources of the COVID-19 virus, which led to this massive pandemic and had the whole world shut down, was possibly a zoonotic disease caused by humans eating, I don't know, bats or whatever. Be that as it may, we don't know, could possibly be, could not. But, so I'd like to know, in allowing for the sale of wildlife meat, what is being done to ensure that wildlife meat is not contaminated with a disease, possible zoonotic disease, that could be passed on to humans? And then I'd also like to know, you know, so we're saying that this wildlife meat will improve the economic conditions of our people and contribute to food security. I'd like to know how much of this new of this trade in wildlife leads to benefits for working class black people who have not been able to go and acquire wildlife, because you know the Department of Natural Wildlife, so these game farms. So how many black people will benefit from this? And then also with the marine protected areas becoming a somewhat of an attraction, who are the operators who are able to provide a tourist facility? And how much of those, or many of those, black people? Because the entire tourism industry, with a few exceptions, are dominated by white people. Thank you very much, James.
Thank you, Honorable Paulson, Honorable Weber.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just got said, I think the first thing is thank you very much for the presentation. Like I said with the previous one, it is actually great to see where we started and where we're going, and I really like to thank the department. There's so many areas and so much work to do it, and there's also a lot of weight. It's never right, but thank you for that. Chair, just one question regarding the renovations of our areas, and the lady goes as I think it was examples. I don't think it was all the restorations that did take place. Is there a possibility that they can provide us with a name and the budget and what exactly was done? What caught my attention was that community hospital. That was a great idea. But whatever we've done and how, you know, how we've done it, what the cost was of that included. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Weber. Can I take us, Honorable Member? Okay, none. Every time you switch your camera on, Minister, I suspect you want to say something. Yes, please proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wanted to make two comments on the questions that Honourable Paulson raised. I think the first important question relates to the issue of zoonotic diseases, and Honourable Paulson would be correct in his suggestion that the consequence of both climate change and also accelerated biodiversity loss does intensify the possibility of increasing contact between human beings and wildlife, and the possibility of cross-species infection. And I think in that regard, SANBI is leading the research and the monitoring that we do together with the Department of Health on this important issue. But I think that honourable members will recall a very controversial piece of legislation, a regulation that was passed by the Department of Agriculture relating to meat standards. And it's something we discussed with the Department of Agriculture when they appeared before the committee. And colleagues will remember that there were all kinds of exotic animals that were on the list, and there was a lot of concern expressed by members of this committee. I think, Honourable Paulson, the intended consequence of that piece of regulation was really to make sure that where appropriate species might form part of human diet, the meat should be handled in an appropriate manner, precisely to avoid the difficulties of zoonotic diseases. I think we're all aware of the unintended consequences of that rather unfortunate regulation. On the game meat strategy, which has recently been adopted by Cabinet. I think the purpose of that strategy is to allow us to facilitate two objectives. The first is to increase areas of the country under land use that would be compatible with the promotion of biodiversity and conservation objectives. And what we understand is that there are significant pieces of land that belong to traditional authorities that border our national parks. The question for those traditional authorities is what if they were to consider some form of biodiversity and conservation activity on that land? What kind of off-take could there be for the community? And as you correctly say, Honourable Paulson, these are communities living in conditions of poverty and communities that desperately require an appropriate revenue stream to improve livelihoods in the area. And I think that it is these communities that the game meat strategy can benefit, because it can allow a situation where there could be a sustainable offtake of game meat from these areas, which would otherwise be part of certain levels of protection. And clearly this is a more compatible land use than, for example, cattle farming, which requires a whole range of inputs that may not necessarily be affordable in those communities. So I think that this is how we understand the game meat strategy relating to our broader objectives of reducing poverty, inequality, and unemployment. I think that obviously tourism and hunting are two other forms of activity that could take place on this land, but we know that tourism offerings may require considerable infrastructure investment and upgrades. So one does need to look at forms of land use that could maximize revenue streams. And similarly, with a sustainable hunting offtake, again, the sort of high value hunting would tend to be more in the form of international tourists, and they would obviously be requiring certain kinds of accommodation and so on. So I think that we're trying to look at diversified revenue streams so that traditional authorities could consider to place some of their land under land use options that are appropriate and compatible with activities on the borders of our national parks. I'm not sure, DDG Mokgoloa, you would be able to answer the issue on marine protected areas. Maybe we should hold that question over until we do the input on the Oceans Pakeha. But let me pause here, there and hand over to yourself.
Thank you very much, Minister. You're correct. I will not be able to answer the question on marine protected areas. There was just the last question from Honorable Weber, where she requested details of all the infrastructure interventions we have made in terms of the names, the budgets, and where and what was done. We should be able to provide that to the committee at a later stage. Thank you very much, Minister, Chair, and Deputy Minister, and members.
Honorable Paulson, is that the legacy end?
Sorry, yes, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. In the absence of further end, can you take probably the last presentation because we're really pressed for time in preparation of the NA?
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Figizolo is with DDG Su. I will hand over to them without waste of time. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, DDG. Can you hear me now?
You are much
clearer. Yes, can you hear you?
Thank you. And my apologies, Chair, and to the members, and to you, Minister, and the DG, and colleagues. I really struggled this morning with load shedding and connection. But I will try and make up time, excuse me, without really leaving any details. So, can you, yes. I would like to welcome this opportunity to present today to the medium achievements revision of targets and timelines of both Oceans Economy Master Plan and Operation Pakeha. And with Operation Pakeha, I'll be focusing on marine protection and governance, which has two legs for this presentation. It's the marine protected areas and marine planning. Aquaculture, as indicated earlier on, I will leave it to my colleague Sue Middleton. And we are in separate rooms in Fortress at UG, but definitely she's listening to the presentation. Can we please next slide, please? Yes, thanks. And with regards to Oceans Economy Master Plan, there are five subsectors, which is the marine manufacturing and repair, working, and there is also marine transport. Then there is aquaculture for marine and freshwater, as well as fisheries for both commercial and small scale, and offshore oil and gas. And these are put into working groups, working group one to working group five, and those working groups are the composition, given the fact that the Oceans Economy Master Plan is a kind of a co-creation. So the process would comprise of the industry, organized labor, government, including state agencies, and community constituencies. And the purpose of the Oceans Economy Master Plan is to advance stabilization, revival, and growth of the subsectors, which I've already spoken to, within Oceans Economy to ensure increased contribution to job creation, GDP, economic recovery, and potential growth. Next slide, please. And the management structures or oversight structures that are in place, and if I can start at the bottom, you'll note, members, that there are small working teams. And those small working teams, that is where the nuts and bolts of each marine manufacturing, mean, of each working group, for example, marine manufacturing and repair is taking place. And those small working teams are chaired by the industries that are relevant to whatever will be the purpose of each working group. For instance, marine transport, it will be the industry that is dealing with marine transport, shipping operators and so on. And then they are convened and report to a plenary, and as they report to the plenary, of course, with marine manufacturing and repairs, they will be co-convened by the Department of Environment, of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment, together with the Department of Transport, as the offshore of oil and gas will be co-convened by the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment, that is our department, together with the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. And then in a plenary session, which is having its frequent meetings, but then they will be doing their reports and analysis of work that has been done. And that is taken into the industry reference group, which I'll speak to in the following slides, as well as the executive oversight committee, which is chaired by the minister of the department. Next slide, please. Development or the development process of OMP started in December 2019 with a series of physical stakeholder workshops for the five identified sectors, as I've made reference to. But progress was severely hampered by the COVID pandemic, which delayed planning, and the OMP development process was then halted and only to be resumed in 2021. And as such, a broader stakeholder engagement sessions commenced in June of 2021, and that led into the establishment of the above mentioned five sectors, and immediately engaged on identified priority issues. A result was a draft Oceans Economy Master Plan, which is now at version 4.1, and the working groups have subsequently combined detailed implementation plans for aquaculture, marine manufacturing and repair, marine transport, and offshore oil and gas subsectors, where more than 98% of work has been done, in spite of some of the areas that still need attention. And with regards to structures, nominations and establishment of the industry reference group has been concluded, and at this point in time, the IRG, that is the industry reference group, has convened three meetings and of continuing with this job of reviewing the plans. Next slide, please. I've made mention in slide four of small working teams, which feed into the different working groups, and within each working group, you will find that there is.
Chairperson, through you, can I urge Dr. Figizola not to go into so much detail, because we have a lot of presentations still to go, and there's time limits. If you can just be a little bit shorter.
Okay, Minister, thank you. I would rather go to slide 15 of that, which is OMP progress. If we can go down to OMP progress and then skip the rest of the other slides. We skip the roadmap, or we skip the contents, and then we go to OMP progress, because the detail is on the implementation plans, what they entail, the impact thereof, and how then they will be spread across on stabilization, revival, and growth. But when it comes into OMP progress, I'll say that targeted stakeholders engagement sessions have been underway since October 2022, including especially with critical stakeholders that did not participate in working groups to close gaps prior to OMT finalization for cabinet approval and to ensure alignment of plans. Secondly, it's crucial inputs with respect to investment figures to inform the overall investment targets for each subsector are required from Transnet and industry are still awaited. And if we're talking about Transnet, that would be Transnet National Ports Authority in particular with regards to the infrastructure that is in the commercial ports. And because of the sensitivities in the business that they do, then it's taking longer to divulge some of those details that will be that are essential to conclude the work that we're talking about. Next slide, please. Our aquaculture sector, I would rather leave it for my colleague, Ms. Sue Middleton, as indicated, and in that sense, can we move on to the next slide? The same applies to fisheries. The fisheries chapter of the Oceans Economy Master Plan was drafted and submitted during the second and third quarter of 2022-2023, and an extensive integrated stakeholder engagement was undertaken, targeting coastal communities and small-scale fishers, and the implementation plan for the fisheries sector is at its initiation phase, as the fisheries stakeholders were engaged in another key process, for instance, FREP 2021. Next slide, please. Next steps are for a way forward for OEMP is to develop the fisheries implementation plan, focusing on capacity and fishing rights allocation process, which are currently taking place, and finalize the stakeholder engagement, including securing access to the outstanding data, especially investment, as I indicated, and to consider all the stakeholder comments received through the stakeholder consultation process, that is oral and submitted written comments, and incorporating those into the overarching OEMP document, as well as updating the content of the subsector implementation plans as applicable, and to present the fisheries, marine transport, marine manufacturing and repair, and offshore oil and gas through the industry reference group, which we've already started doing, and taking the methods of decision-making regarding OEMP and implementation plans to the Executive Oversight Committee for consideration and endorsement, and to submit to Foresight Cluster and Food to Cabinet for approval of the OMP and subsector implementation plans. Next slide, please. Well, talking about marine, just a second. With water quality as part of marine protection services and ocean governance, the target and water quality program has been implemented right across the four coastal provinces, and where there are 30 priority sites or sampling sites in all those provinces. And throughout the year, there has been activity of sampling and analyzing the data, and then also writing reports. And those reports have been presented to the department. And the only problem has been with KwaZulu-Natal, where out of mainly because of the flooding that took place there in the last year, then there were other areas which were not accessible. But we are busy working on that so that we can continue to have a full picture of what is happening in that space. And with marine protected areas, we are in a process of developing two marine protected areas management plans per annum. And the two that were management plans that were submitted to the Minister for approval for public comments are both in the Eastern Cape, which are the Port Elizabeth corals and the Agala marine protected areas. And stakeholder engagements for the draft management plans for the Port Elizabeth coral and Agalas front were conducted and comments were collated. Next slide, please. With regards to marine protection services and ocean governance and particularly marine spatial planning, there are four areas that have been identified in the Western Cape, the Southwestern Cape, and the east coast of South Africa, as well as the offshore territories of Marion Island and the Prince Edward Island. And but for this particular time of reporting, what we've been able to do is to develop marine sector plans, that is the 10 of them, for one area, which is the Southwestern Cape, and those are the 10 as listed there, starting with the marine biodiversity sector plan to marine transport and port sector plans, covering marine offshore oil and gas sector, as well as wild fisheries sector plan. And I'd like to hand over to Sue for aquaculture. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fiki Zolo. Greetings to the Honourable Chair, Honourable Minister, and Honourable Members. With your permission, I'll turn off my video while doing the presentation. I'm going to be talking to the progress that has been made since holding the aquaculture lab in Durban in 2014 under Operation Pakisa and the theme of unlocking the potential for South Africa's ocean economy. Next slide, please. So the Operation Pakisa had 9 initiatives, and very quickly the 9 initiatives are selection and implementation of catalyst projects, legislative reform, interdepartmental authorizations committee, globally recognized monitoring and certification system, the formation of the Aquaculture Development Fund. Next slide. So what's happening here is the orange bullets, if you could just click a few times, are just highlighting what the outcomes and objectives of each of these initiatives are. So if we can go to the next slide. Capacity building is the 6th initiative, capacity building and skills development. 7 is the coordinated industry-wide marketing effort. 8 is the government preferential procurement process, and 9 is the formation of aquaculture development zones, or new aquaculture development zones. So if we can go to the next slide, we're now going to go into the detail of the progress that has been made under the 9 initiatives. Next slide. In terms of Initiative 1, which is the selection and implementation of catalyst projects, since 2014, 28 new projects have been registered and incorporated as part of the Oceans Pakisa economy. In total, there are now 45 projects that are producing farmed aquatic animals. A small-scale aquaculture implementation plan has been finalized, and we've signed an MOU with the Department of Small Business Development in 2022, including the Small Enterprise Finance Agency and the Small Enterprise Development Agency, with the aim of supporting small-scale aquaculture. Next slide. In terms of Initiative 2, which is legislative reform, there have been 2 focus areas. Firstly, the Aquaculture Development Bill, and secondly, the Inland Fisheries Policy. In terms of the Aquaculture Development Bill, it's currently just finished an extensive engagement and public consultation with industry. We
we're now looking at incorporating all those inputs and that were received from industry with the intention of submitting it to the Office of the State Law Advisor this quarter. And then we intend to submit to Parliament by the end of the 23-24 financial year. In terms of the inland fisheries policy, this has been approved by Cabinet in August 2022, and we are busy drafting the implementation plan, which will be finalized in quarter one of the next financial year. Initiative 3, which is the Interdepartmental Authorizations Committee, the following authorizations have been approved. There's 12 EIAs, 2 appeals, 7 coastal discharge permits, 9 biodiversity risk assessments, 7 land leases, 19 new water leases, and 28 aquaculture permits or rights have been issued. Next slide. In terms of Initiative 4, which is the monitoring and certification system, the department has initiated a process to enter into a service level agreement with the National Regulator for Compulsory Standards, the NRCS, to undertake an independent on-farm aquaculture product safety sampling program. In terms of standards, 4 standards have been developed and or amended. These are the raw bivalves, canned mollusks, live lobsters, and canned fish. And then the implementation of a certification program to facilitate access to markets and health guarantees. This is very important for exports. And here the intention is to retain existing markets, particularly in the Far East and China, to enter into partnerships with various government departments to provide, partnerships with various government departments to provide veterinary services in the Eastern Cape and Western Cape, and I'll come back to that one, and to continue monitoring and surveilling aquaculture farms in terms of disease control. Next slide. Initiative 5 deals with the setting up of the Aquaculture Development Fund, and slide just shows the number of partnerships that we've entered into with various government departments and agencies. The list is there to set up the Aquaculture Development Fund. We've also conducted feasibility studies for marine finfish, oysters, mussels, tilapia, trout, abalone, catfish, freshwater ornamentals, and marine crayfish. The Aquaculture Development and Enhancement Program has been, the grant has been set up and implemented by the Department of Trade, Industry and Cooperation. We've had an aquaculture finance and investment seminar, 3 of them. The first one took place in Durban in 2019. Then in 2022, that was a virtual one because of COVID. And the third one will be taking place in November of this year. The Directory for Aquaculture Finance and Grant Funding was reviewed in 2021 and has been published. And we also participated in Investing into Africa conference that was held in London in October 2022. Next slide, Initiative 6 deals with the skills and capacities development. And here, a skills working group has been established and facilitated by the South African International Maritime Institute. A skills and needs analysis was conducted in the sector in 2017, and AgriCETA Subsector Skills Committee for Aquaculture has been established. And then 8 provincial veterinarians have been trained at a master's degree level at Stirling University in Scotland. Aquaculture vets were identified as a scarce skills, in the country, and prior to this intervention, there was only one aquaculture vet in practicing in South Africa. The aquaculture farmer and aquaculture farm assistance qualifications has been set up through the AgriCETA and approved by the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations. And then we have an in-house aquaculture technical technology demonstration center, the ADDC, which is located at Gerib Dam in the Free State. And there we provide advisory services, including site visits, as well as providing catfish fingerlings to small-scale projects in the surrounding areas and provinces on request. Ongoing research takes place at the center, and it is a very important training and capacity building center, and thus far we've trained over 1,000 potential farmers, officials, students and interns. Next slide, initiative 7 relates to the coordinated industry-wide marketing program, and there together with industry we have developed a public awareness and marketing strategy for aquaculture. We've developed a transformation strategy for the sector. The department, together with the Tilapia Aquaculture Association of South Africa, has formed an import and export working group in order to strengthen and diversify markets. And we're looking to protect local markets, as well as trade regulations and exports. A recipe book version 2 for aquaculture products has been developed and is available. And there are aquaculture videos that have been developed for trout, catfish, oysters, mussels, and abalone. And then various conferences have been taking place in July 2022, with the aim of marketing and creating public awareness about aquaculture products. Next slide, which is initiative 7, which deals with the coordinated industry-wide marketing efforts. And here various very good quality YouTube videos have been created for trout, tilapia, mussels, oysters, abalone, and catfish, and there are the links if anybody is interested in watching these videos. And then there are two new videos that are under development, one on the Gerib Center and the other one on aquaculture research and development opportunities. Next slide, please. Initiative 8 deals with preferential procurement, and here the department is engaging with various government departments and entities to list aquaculture products on menus, and significant work has been done with the Department of Correctional Services, where nutritional guidelines for the procurement of fish products were set in motion, and we've conducted a successful catfish trial at the Kirkwood Correctional Center in the Eastern Cape, and we're currently working on a tilapia trial for fish cakes in the Devon Correctional Center. Next slide, please, which is the last slide. This is Initiative 9, which deals with the development and implementation of aquaculture development zones, and two development zones in particular. The first one is the Saldanha Bay Aquaculture Development Zone, which was approved in 2018. There are currently 3,200 tons of fish being graded in the ADZ, especially mussels, oysters, and finfish. And then the Algoa Bay Aquaculture Development Zone, the EIA, was approved 2021. There, this ADZ is focusing on mussels, oysters, and finfish. The inaugural ADZ Management Committee meeting was held on the 14th of September last year, and the second
meeting was held in November last year. And a call for interest to use the zone was published in February of last year in the Daily Dispatch. Chair, that is the end of the aquaculture petition. Thank you.
Okay. I got kicked out for a minute there, but I'm back. Honorable members, it is now opportunity to engage the presentation. The first one will be Honorable Paulson. I don't see other hands. In the meantime, please proceed, Honorable Paulson.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Jefferson, I'm just going to focus on one of the programs, the aquaculture program, and there's just a few questions here. One of the oldest aquaculture the countries who have been practicing aquaculture for a very long time is the Chinese, since 3500 BC. And they also produce the world's 62% of the world's entire aquaculture fishing produce. So I'd like to know why they still have an obsession with sending our people to Stirling University as opposed to learn from the Chinese. We should start with it towards the east, because that is where all the development is taking place in aquaculture and many other areas. And also, in terms of aquaculture, has the department considered, especially the fact that this department is responsible for its for the poor fishing management practices and empowering big business by granting them the lion's share of all fishing rights and thereby decimating our coastal fishing towns? Has the department considered to compensate those communities by implementing aquaculture projects or mariculture projects in those coastal towns, those fishing towns, to compensate for the decimation of the industry, fishing industry in those towns? Right? Because I can understand wanting to do it inland, but also mariculture is also a good option as opposed to aquaculture projects in them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Paulson. Further take us, Honorable Members. Okay, I see the DG has requested to be excused due to another commitment. And the minister is not switching her camera on. Can we get the response?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Paulson, for the question. I am joined by my colleague, Mr. Belamani Samoli, who is the technical expert on aquaculture and the chief director of aquaculture. He's actually joining us from Rome, where he's attending a technical aquaculture meeting at the FAO. So with your permission, Chair and Minister, I'll ask Mr. Samoli to respond to Honorable Paulson's question. Bells, you're muted. There we go.
Okay, thank you very much, DDG. I was waiting for the Honorable Chair to give us a go ahead if I could respond to the question, but I will go ahead. Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, members of the Portfolio Committee, and good afternoon to the Minister, Deputy Minister, the DG, and colleagues. There were two questions that came from Honorable Paulson regarding the aquaculture sector. The first question is around China? Why are we sending our vets to the University of Stirling instead of China? And the response to that is, Honorable Professor, we evaluate each and every institution's strengths or each country's strengths. When it comes to aquatic medicine, which is a highly specialized area, the University of Stirling is the leading university in the world when it comes to training of vets in this particular field, hence our choice to send our vets to that particular university. When it comes to China, we do collaborate with them on various fronts. Their strength is around the production systems, essentially, and we have in the past and currently still collaborate with them. We have sent a lot of students to China to do various courses, long-term and short-term, postgraduate courses, masters, and to about 2 weeks courses. So we collaborate with each and every country depending on their strength. That's the first question, Honorable Chair. Second question is around the, I take it around the dwindling fish stocks that this which could be due to a number of reasons, whether it's climate change or overfishing or poaching and so on and so forth. So what are we doing from an aquaculture front to sort of meet some of the socio-economic challenges and some of the environmental issues that are faced by those particular communities or the environment around the coast? Honorable Paul says, and our strength in terms of aquaculture is actually with marine aquaculture. Maybe for your clarity, there are two components of aquaculture. There's a marine aquaculture component, which is a farming of aquatic organisms along the coast using seawater. The second component is on inland fisheries, which is farming of aquatic plants or animals using a freshwater system. Our strength is actually on the marine component. The majority in terms of quantity produced as well as value, economic value, and jobs created is along the coast, particularly the abalone farming. That's our strength. So we do have a number of projects along the coast, and we continue to support development of new projects along the coast. As my VDG has mentioned, that we currently have more than 30 projects that have been registered on Operation Pakisa, and majority of them are actually along the coast. We also have an initiative on abalone ranching, because I think the abalone ranching stock, the abalone, natural abalone stock, have taken a serious knock. So we have an initiative around abalone ranching, where we work particularly with the communities in the Eastern Cape, Western Cape, as well as the Northern Cape, to supplement the natural stock that has been that has reached levels of not being viable commercially. So we bring in the spat from the abalone farms to supplement that. Those were the two questions, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
Honorable members, I'm going to need your guidance. It is now 20 past 1, and the plenary is starting at 2. We are also presenting there the National Flood and Fire Forest Amendment Bill is being presented to the House today. I'm not too sure how far is the presentation, how much is left. Is the DG still here? No, I think she is left. Minister, are you able to guide? Honorable member.
Chair. Honorable member. I think we have a little minute left before the plenary starts. I would advise that if there are extra presentations, let's shift them to another meeting. because we won't finish there. I don't know, because those who are in Cape Town, they must still travel to Blenheim. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. That's a proposal, Honourable Weber.
I propose that we accept or I second the proposal of Honourable Sabata Mbata.
Thank you very much. May I request that, I hope that some of these presentations, whatever that is left, will be forwarded, and then we'll try and squeeze it in one of our meetings. It is not out of disrespect, colleagues in the department and the minister, and the deputy minister. We are just pressed for time. Let's then agree that we will meet in the National Assembly. Minister, when you see the camera on, you know there's an element of of raising a hand in the rec. Please come in, Minister.
Chairperson, what I wanted to suggest, I agree with you, we must all rush to the National Assembly. What I want to suggest is that we take the presentation as read and colleagues submit written questions. And then we will, as we always do, we will respond. Thank you.
That's another viable option. Thank you, Minister. Honourable Members, I'm going to request your indulgence. Wherever there are...
I think that's a good...
Honourable Person?
I agree with the Minister. It's a good suggestion. We take the, and we read it and we submit questions for the time.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Honourable Paulson. I think we just need a synchronized way so that when we meet in the Portfolio Committee, we don't have a situation that says, I submitted a question and I did not get a response. Perhaps let's try and facilitate it through Chileka and Chileka to the department, from the department back to Chileka and to the committee. I think that way it will work. So that if we don't send individual requests to Sue or to any other person in the department, we'll facilitate it through Chileka, Chileka to the department, from the department to Chileka and back to the committee, so that all the responses are kept on record. If we're all agreed, Honourable Members, let me take this opportunity to thank you and apologize. We could not manage time today. I know for a fact it will not happen again. With all of that being said, thank you once again. Until we meet, let's meet in the National Assembly. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, sir.
Recording stopped.